On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. Everybody, before we begin this episode, I just wanted to give you a friendly reminder that this is part two of the interview with Kyle Morris. Part one, we focus more on Olympic lifting, velocity-based training, and life outside of professional baseball, where in this episode, we're going to be talking more networking, adaptability, finding success as a strength coach, things along those lines. So just a reminder, if you haven't, check out part one on our website, on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes. And with that being said, let's get into the episode.
I want to kind of transition a little bit to just some of the more general questions that we usually go over. And I'd be curious to hear your feedback just because of your diverse background. But what makes a strength and conditioning coach successful in your mind?
Really, I think it boils down to being able to receive trust and buy-in and generate that. By proving your results and proving that you care for your athletes. And so being able to really, truly generate buy-in and gather an athlete's trust is first and foremost, because that is really going to dictate their level of dedication to you and to the program.
Yeah, and it's cool. Like some guys are just buying into anything, right? Like you get new guys coming in, they're like, dude, I'll follow your program. I don't care. Just give me something. Yeah. And then some guys are really hard to chip away at, but those are the ones that are super rewarding for us, right? It's like you really have to earn that guy's trust, because the thing is, like, these are very high level athletes, right? And they're very good at what they do. And some of them are very skeptical about who they listen to because they've gotten that to that point without you in their life, you know? And then all of a sudden you're going to come in and be like, if you do this, you'll be great. And you're like, I'm already in the big leagues, or I'm already in the NHL. Like, I'm pretty good without you. So, like, you have to chip away and get those guys on your side.
And baseball, I mean, baseball is such a unique sport in that, you know, I feel like the presence of social media, and everybody's got, like, a guy. And you're kind of having to fight, you know, that losing battle sometimes, and or an uphill battle, rather, that, you know, not saying that your stuff is going to be different from his guy, but you're going to have to, you know, it might be such a completely different philosophy and really a need. And that's just because he's at a different place in the season, you know, and where he's with his guy for, you know, an hour and a half to 2 hours. Know, fresh from doing their program from, you know, whoever knows where, and they bring into spring training. I think that's definitely such a difficult battle sometimes. What I've found and seen, that's a little bit different from baseball to the NHL. And you have definitely a lot more of a smoother transition in hockey. Because I think for the most part, what I've seen is philosophies are very similar across the board, and the guys kind of know when they get in season and when they've training, like, because you grew up with hockey and you know that it's going to be different, and they know it's going to be different in season than it is in the off season, where you know, I feel like sometimes in baseball the guys try to, you know, interject a little bit even in the in season, and then, you know, if they're telling you, okay, whatever organization you're with is completely backwards, then you're going to believe the guy that your agent's hooking you up with and the guy that you've spent, you know, 8 hours a week with in the off season. So I'm not trying to bash any of the guys, but it's just, you know, sometimes it causes some conflict with players and with strength coaches and staff.
Yeah, it's a very real battle in baseball, man. And especially the higher up you go, guys have more money. They can kind of afford to pay trainers a little bit more, or nutritionists, or whoever it is. And at least in my experience, I think for me, the way that has helped me get through to those guys is to connect with those off-season trainers and let the player know, like, hey, I've been talking to your guy. He sent me your program. I sent him some thoughts. Like, we're working together to put you in the best spot. And then you become an extension of the guy,
yeah,
right? And that player is like, oh, okay, he's working with my guy versus telling me that my guy's wrong. Like, because the thing is, they put their off season to those people, and the off season is a very important time, as we know. And if they're putting their most precious training time in somebody else's hands, you have to respect that person because that's who they trust to try to make those gains in performance or muscle mass or body composition or whatever it is they're trying to improve. They trust that person enough to say, hey, I'm putting all of my faith in you. Help me. And then when they get to you, the second you say, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about, that you've lost that guy already.
Yeah.
Like he's like, he trusts that guy so much that instead of being like, you're right, he's wrong, he's going to say, he's right, you're wrong.
Exactly.
I want to deal with you. So for me, yep, that's how I've gotten ahead of it. It's just, I reach out to them. I'm very proactive about just getting in contact, and we don't have to see eye to eye on everything. Right. But I said, I live in the gray so that I can have those conversations with, hey man, your guy's doing great training. We're seeing this on our assessments. Can you just add this in a little bit? And usually it works well. There are some people that don't want to work together, and that's probably a whole nother thing that, you know, you got to kind of try to figure out for yourself. But I think at least for me, trying to get in contact with them ahead of time and being proactive has helped me get that buy-in and that trust from those players.
Absolutely. All about their relationship development, man. Yeah.
100%. Do you have any advice for others in the field? You've been a number of places. So really anything that can apply to either you want to get into tactical, you want to do NHL, anything you have, we're ears here.
Yeah. I think what's benefited me and other people that I know in the field the most is just when they go to network. I mean, you know, networking is everything. And don't wait for, you know, a conference or a clinic to do it. Like, literally just go to places, just show face, and don't be afraid to be a fly on the wall. I can't even tell you the number of times that, you know, I've just shot an email to a coach, to a facility that said, hey, you know, I'm going to be around this area from, you know, for these 3 days, I'd love to stop by and talk shop, or literally just be a fly on the wall and learn of what you guys do. And because a lot of times, I mean, you know, this, like, when you're giving a presentation or you're going to a clinic and you're going to a conference, for one, like, you know, a lot of people are going to be just trying to, you know, look for relationships to build, you know, their job, their likelihood of getting a job. And so don't wait for it to do that. And then when you listen to those presentations, you know, a lot of times it's like, you got to doctor them up a little bit in these big conferences and these clinics. So just showing up and starting a relationship that way and let it happen organically is my best advice for anybody really trying to get into a different field and be persistent. Like, I can't even tell you how many times I've, even now, like I hear no, or I hear no reply when I'm just like traveling through an area and like, hey, you know, love to stop by, and you know, you get crickets, and don't let that ever really turn you down. And then other things, like, develop feel. I mean, I think that's a very popular term with baseball, but I've seen so many coaches at so many different places that I've been, you know, they can, you know, read, you know, every book under the sun. And as, you know, two of my mentor and buds, you know, Kevin Barr and Spencer Clevenger say, they can be certified A through Z, and it doesn't matter. You know, if you don't have feel and you can't gain, you know, trust and a relationship from an athlete or from, you know, the other people on staff, it's not going to matter. And you, like, you've seen it, where I'm sure you've seen people on staff that have come and gone that just can't get that. And also, you know, be with that, be adaptable. I know, you know, so many people that are just so by their textbook or so by this article that they read, and it has to dictate their entire program. And they're gonna, you know, if they lose a day or if they don't have this piece of equipment at this time and they can't adapt and adjust to it, you know, all of it's forgotten. And, you know, and either you go into a panic mode or you just have to, you know, make something up on the fly. And either way, that's not a good place to be. So always be adaptable and have, you know, plans for A, B, and C, because most likely you're going to get to Q, you know, when you're especially dealing in the sports world, and and things are happening and always changing. And then don't overanalyze and overtest. I think people put so much pressure and so much emphasis on these testing numbers and testing parameters that they kind of lose sight on what the goal is. And the goal is obviously making sure athletes stay resilient, stay injury free, and they perform well, but also you want to win too. So when that overtakes your ability to coach and your ability to adjust your programs, and you get so involved in your testing protocol, then really nobody benefits from it. So I think those certain things from my career, and you know, the do's and don'ts have been instrumental. And, you know, I've learned that from great mentors along the way, and, you know, Chris created great relationships by letting them happen organically. And you really learn better that way, as well, by just showing up at a place.
Yeah. So three things come to mind there. First, with the conferences, right? Like if you go there and your goal is to strictly try to build your, you know, your network for a better job, like people can see that. And the other thing is, like, you may not get to talk to who you want to because there's such big crowds. Like, if it's a popular person, there's probably going to be a bunch of people going to that person. Yeah. And they might not remember you. But if you reach out, you visit individually, they're more likely to remember. So very good point there. The second one for me is the adaptability piece. Like, at Salisbury, that was, like I said, that was an unbelievably good thing for me that it was my first exposure to strength and conditioning because we had really good teams. They won a lot. It was Division III, so there wasn't a ton of pressure, and we had no budget for strength and conditioning.
Yeah.
So it was like, whatever you have in this room, that's what you have. Figure it out.
Yep.
Right? Like, and you know, you've seen it. Like, it is what it is, but like, yeah, they keep producing championship teams there and winning teams and conference teams there with limited resources, right?
Absolutely.
Like, so for me, it was really good to like learn on the fly there, be adaptable, and just, you know, just do it. Just figure it out, right? And then finally, like the testing piece, I love that idea, right, man? It's like, especially now, everybody wants more data. Everybody wants more screening. Everybody wants more, you know, numbers. And we talked about it earlier, like with the velocity-based training. Like, I don't need you to work up to a one rep max squat to know where you're at. Like, I can tell if your squat max is improved just by looking at some of the velocities on your bar. Like, hey, you're moving this load that's usually, you know, a 0.5 day. Now you're moving at 0.75. Like, I don't need to see more. I know you've improved. Let's cut it off there and save some of that adaptability for something else, right? Like,
exactly.
Let's put that energy to something else instead.
Because
it's taxing, right? Like, to get up, especially for an athlete who's not necessarily proficient in the weight room as, like, powerlifters, right? Like, Westside, you max out every week, right? Like, that's their job. They're powerlifters, right? Like, some athletes are not proficient in the weight room and then they're maxing out and it's like they got taxed hard. And then it's like, now you have to adjust a couple of days. And then if you're testing every 6 weeks, you're really just training to get to that test, right? You're not training for overall performance. Like, in 6 weeks, we got to retest this. Like, okay, we've got 5 pounds more on our squat. We got 5 pounds more. It's like,
and
we
wasted
we win?
A day too.
Yes, right. Like, and that's what I'm saying is like over the course of a year, if you test every 6 weeks, you're wasting an absurd amount of days that you could be training, doing something else where, like we said earlier with velocity based stuff, like I could tell, let's just move on.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Like it's going to be changing for next week anyway. So
yeah.
So
and
let's
go ahead and move on and not waste
a whole entire week of training, like you said.
Yeah. Your maxes and even like mobility screens and things like that, they change so much. And I'm not opposed to any of these things, right? Again, I live in the gray with most, right? Like I can see both sides, but like you have a travel day, right? Like you fly cross country, your sleep is all off, you come in, like your max is going to look different that day. Your movement patterns are going to look different that day where, like you said, you're at home for a week and a half. You're in a good routine. Your schedule is all on point. Like maybe you're feeling really good. Like maybe your max is technically higher that week. And the velocity based stuff for me can just kind of tell me where you're at on that given training day. So I can get the most out of what I'm looking for with you that day.
Great. It's the purest form of auto reg, right?
Exactly.
Exactly. I read a research. Well, it's Dr. Mann. That's 18% on a daily adjustable one way or the other. So you give me a 36% chance of differential. It's like I like my odds of not doing a 1RM.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the other once you set that 1RM, everybody's like, ooh, now you got to beat it next time. Yeah. You're like, whoa.
And my next 3 months are going to be dedicated to that 1RM of percentage based training.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like maybe you were just having a really good day that day and you were on the plus side of that 18%. And now you bump all your maxes to match that.
Yeah.
You know, 30 pound squat jump. And all of a sudden you're like, 75% is crushing you and you're like, what just happened here?
I'm going to have to be a really sad guy for the next 2 months is what's happening.
Yes, exactly. But, exactly.
Dude, going back to Salisbury, what is it? It's mag's jump, right? It's not powers jump is athletes only, mag's jump, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So I remember so many mornings when I was there and I don't know if you met him. He's at North Florida now, a guy named Brian Burt, and he's a phenomenal strength coach. And I remember like us going in there for basketball and, you know, you have like, you're sharing a weight room with like general students and us having to like rope off. And like, I think there, you always came to blows with a couple of students, you know, just saving them for basketball when they show up in like 10 minutes and just be like bargaining with dudes just to get racks, you know, for exercises. So I think I like going back to, you know, Coach Nine and the Salisbury thing, I don't think anybody has done more with less in their entire career, which is phenomenal in their sport.
Yeah, just the adaptability of being there. Yeah. And like you said, that one of the two gyms is for regular students, right? And regular students are training while the team is training. And it's a very weird dynamic, but you got to do it, right? That's what I said. Yep. You got to find a way to get it done. That's it.
Yeah.
And then when you get to places, you know, in pro ball or NHL or tactical, and you have your own weight room, you have your own program, you're like, this is easy compared to what I did. Exactly. I didn't know what I was doing, right? I didn't have any strength and conditioning experience. And then on top of that, I have to run these athletes through a program while working around general population. Like it was just so much in the fire, like a perfect learning environment to just mold strength coaches. And if you look at the tree of strength coaches that have been in Salisbury, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's insane, dude. Yep.
Absolutely. We had women's soccer, and I think we had myself, two GAs, and two volunteers, and we've all gone on to like either pro sports or like work at Division One or like be a head guy. And it's like these girls have no idea like how good of quality strength coaches are here, and like we're all just kind of, you know, doing our thing, getting the teams through, and you don't know any better, right? It's just another day of training. Like, all right, next group's in an hour, so let's get this done.
Yep.
So. In terms of continuing ed, where are you going? Are you reading any books, listening to podcasts, attending seminars? What do you got for us?
Yeah. I think if I had to pick any book, right now outside of, you know, your VBT with Dr. Mann, I think, Movement Over Maxes. I don't know if you've read that one with Zach DeChance down, at TCU. And that's a phenomenal book as it relates to, progressions and intensities. Throughout the course of an entire offseason and in season. And then obviously the other ones are, you know, Science and Practice with Sosorski. And then one that I really, really depend on, I've read it maybe five times cover to cover, is The Tier System with Joe Ken. And I think just starting out in the field of strength and conditioning, no matter what the sport, and that really gives you a lot of room to learn about, you know, being adaptable. So, you know, going, I think that's kind of like the theme right now with our combo, but just developing those tiers and what you want to be specific on that day, that cycle, that off season, or that entire plan. It has really, really allowed me to progress and regress different athletes. And I mean, then one that, you know, when I was at IMG, I you know, had the opportunity to learn under, you know, a great group of strength coaches and a great track coach with Lauren Seagrave. And the Charlie Francis training system, Charlie Francis is a phenomenal book as it relates to, you know, speed training and energy system development correlating with that. So those are really four of my books that I really recommend and really depend on and always look back to. And then, you know, seminar wise or clinic, I would say really the local or regional clinics. Obviously, you know, the big ones are great and they're great for meeting people and listening to these phenomenal presenters. But, you know, you get a lot more of an intimate setting with the local and regional clinics. And really the National High School Strength and Conditioning Association put on some great ones throughout state of Florida that, you know, I've been able to go to and really, really meet and network with coaches. And you really get to learn a lot more. And I feel like sometimes younger strength coaches, myself too, is just, you don't really want to ask a question, you know, when you're in a big crowd. And like you just related to, is just in those giant settings, you're not going to get your turn to ask and they're not going to remember you. But when you're in those smaller settings, you know, that 20 to 50 range of people, and then sometimes even less, you're able to ask, you know, the questions that you want and really get a lot of one-on-one time and relationship development that way. And you can truly see the way things operate, you know, outside of a presentation level.
Yeah. The, in terms of the books, like I interned at TCU, so Zach is the man, and like his book is great. And he had us read Science and Practice. He had us read Charlie Francis. He had us read Tier Systems and Velocity.
So I'm on the right track.
So yeah, so either we're both right or we're both wrong. But we're on the
we're
same.
Both idiots, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
We're on the same track. And then I love, again, the idea of the smaller, more intimate setting. One of the things that I had done when I was living in Phoenix is there's a lot of pro ball strength coaches out there, and I have connections through this podcast, right? And I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna text these guys, let's get together for dinner. So we'd get 8 to 10 of us together for dinner once a month. We'd go sit down, we'd eat, and we'd just talk shop. And it was like being able to connect with those guys for real and being able to just talk some shop without any stress or without like, hey, you know, it's 3 hours gone and we're still sitting here like, I should probably go home, but nah, yeah, let's sit. And before you know it, you're like, okay, seriously, it's midnight. Like I need to go home. Like my wife's probably wondering where I'm at, but just those small settings like that can be so great for your development. Yep. And I've said it here a couple of times, like you can read the books, you can listen to the podcast, you can see the conferences, but when you can have those conversations about things with people, it just takes your learning to the next step, right? If I read the velocity-based training from Brian Mann, I'm going to have questions. But if I talk with him in a small setting, one, I can get those questions answered, and two, it's going to open new questions and new talking points for me. So I love the idea of just being in that small setting and just kind of, you know, talking about whatever.
Absolutely. Yep. And we have a group that, you know, we've started, I think, in November or December, and just from a few of the local tactical strength coaches, and we do the same exact thing, and that number has grown over the past few months, and just started from, you know, one text. I sent a strength coach at Langley, which is a local base here. And I was like, hey, I heard you on a podcast, you know, would love to get together. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're having, you know, a dinner with both high school and local tactical strength coaches, you know, once a month, like you're saying, just talking shop, and, you know, hours go by, but it also just develops such good relationships, and you get to bounce so many ideas off of each other and learn from other experiences. So,
thanks. Yeah. And it's genuine friendships, right? Like I consider all of those people my friends, right? It's not, hey, I know this guy, he's the coordinator of so-and-so organization. Mm-hmm. Like he's going to get me a job, or I'm going to get a job. Yeah. Or like, it's, hey man, how's your family doing? I know your wife's pregnant. Is everything okay? Like, hey, I know you got a home gym. Like I got one as well. Maybe you should look into this company to get some cheap equipment or something. Like it's genuine friendships that you build versus like those kind of superficial networking conference relationships where like, hey, nice to meet you. Yeah. Nice to meet you too. And then that's it. Yeah. Like I can text any of those guys. I can call them anytime and they'll answer. If they call me, I'll answer. And it's like, hey dude, what's up? What are you doing this weekend? What are you reading like right now? Yeah. Like, you know, just talking like friends for real. And that, I think those are the real relationships that we need to cherish versus those superficial, you know, surface level ones that we get at those big conferences sometimes.
Yep. Absolutely.
Dude, we've been at it for a while and I don't want to keep you too long, but I'd like to knock out a lightning round if you'd like.
Let's go.
All right. So 4 questions, as long or short an answer as you want. And then I promise I'll get you out of here.
All right.
First question, who is your biggest influence in the field of strength and conditioning?
I would say Kevin Barr, formerly the Miami Marlins. I met KB at working at IMG with the combine that he came in, and he's just been such a great influence on me and in my career, and just truly learning, you know, learning the field and learning develop feel and the simplicity that he brings with, you know, with his training methods and the buy-in. I've never seen it anyplace else. So he's been such a great influence.
One piece of equipment to train with, what would it be?
I'm going to get bashed for this, but I everybody says, you know, barbell and 45s. That's such a generic answer, but I'm going to say a kettlebell. and you can do so much of a wide variety of exercises and then train in such a wide variety of energy systems as well, whether it be, you know, power, like, or what we said earlier, you know, metabolic conditioning or overall endurance. It's such a great tool and you don't need a lot of room to have it. And, you know, it's very, very cheap. So most people can afford it.
My first home gym in Arizona was a 70-pound kettlebell. So
nice. Well, dude, you're tougher than me. For COVID, I got like a 54.
It got tough when I mean, you can do goblet squats and swings and rows, yeah. And you're like, I'm just going to do 1,000 of these and just see how bad it sucks. I'm like out on the sidewalk at our apartment in Phoenix, and people are walking by, and I'm just dripping sweat.
I did that. I brought it last year to a park during COVID, to a park in Jupiter when they had like just opened up and right before they had closed down prior to that. I would do the same thing, like whether it be like swings or squats and pull up bars. Like I ogre is just dripping in sweat and looking disgusting.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Professionally, I would have to say my first year as a GA, we won, my rowing girls actually won the national title. And so that was pretty cool coming out of the gate. And then we got upset by one race in 2014. And then personally, on a more like personal level, there's a player, he's still in the Cardinals organization. And then when I started with him back in, this was in 2014, so right after I was at Nova, I went and was the GCL coach with the Cardinals there for that season, and was working with Rachel Bachrick, and that was a fun experience and an awesome experience. But this kid, man, I rode this kid so hard. I mean, every single day, it was something that he just loved to test. And you know, just kept on grinding them all throughout the season. And, you know, we had our issues. We butted heads probably maybe about 4 times a day over anything and everything, whether it be seats on the bus, sandwiches, to obviously lifts and stretch lines. but the season after that, so this is when I was at LSU, he actually like FaceTimed me and we had another strength coach there. And he called me to tell me, hey, like, you know, what you did was right for me. And you know, it's even in the short time that we've been, you know, you haven't been my strength coach, I really understand, you know, why you did that. And it wasn't just me and just you and I having issues. It was me being, being a turd and you trying to push me and seeing, you know, my potential. So that was a pretty cool experience there.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Some of those young guys just, they don't see it right away, but you know, after 5 years or whatever, you get a call and they're like, that was right. You helped me. Right. Yeah. Like that's at those lower levels. A lot of those guys need that guidance and they don't want it originally right away, you know? And then after a while they're like, I got it. Right. Yeah. And those are the ones that stick around, right? Like they make the adjustment, they change their attitude, they start working harder, they kind of fall in line. And you know, it's not to take away from their individuality or anything like that, but they just need that guidance. And sometimes it comes in the form of, you know, hard love. It is what it is, especially at those lower levels with those young kids.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Last one from me, any career other than strength and conditioning, what would you choose?
It's a toss up. I mean, given just where I grew up and the family, you know, ties, it would definitely be, you know, working, you know, being an operator, being, you know, possibly a SEAL in the Navy. I think that would have been awesome. And then secondly, grew up surfing, grew up around water my entire life. I don't think I've lived more than, you know, a 2-mile drive from, you know, body of water. I think being a North Shore lifeguard right there on the North Shore, I think that's just constant action. And such an adrenaline rush. You see you guys in surfing competitions, and then just in regular times, those guys are just getting after it every single day and saving some lives and making the world a better place. So
that's cool, man. I feel like I've seen on your Instagram a few times where you're out on the water or you're surfing.
Yeah, that's about all it is. So
I had a feeling it was going to be something along the lines of water. So
yeah,
it just made too much sense to me.
Yeah.
But dude, it's been awesome. Thank you for sharing about all your experiences and chopping it up about velocity-based training. And really, it's been an awesome talk for me. Like I said, personally, I love the NHL connection. If people want to get in touch with you, where can we get more? Is social media the best place, or is it somewhere else?
Social media. I'm on Instagram. I don't have a Twitter. I'm old school and lame. But it's going to be Kyle_Morris. That's MORRIS. And then the number is 757.
Awesome. Dude, thank you again. And
thank you.
We'll be in touch soon and stay safe.
Thanks. You as well, man. Good luck to your socks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, everybody, that concludes our episode with Kyle. I hope you enjoyed this one as well as part one. Again, just a quick reminder, if you haven't, check out part one on YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, or the PBS CCS website. Three things that I took from Kyle in this episode: be adaptable and have multiple plans. Don't test just for the sake of testing, and find different ways to build your network. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.